Today's program is brought to you by Austin East Ciders. For more information, visit their website at austineastciders.com.
I'm Erin Fairbanks, host of The Farm Report. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that send. It's gonna get you some.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
My name is Souther Teague.
And today we have our good buddy. And for, actually, the last time he was on the show was about 2.5 years ago. I can't even believe it. I think it was episode...
Time flies.
Yeah, episode 124. Now we're on 206.
Wow.
Yeah. Crazy. Well, anyway, welcome back to the studio. That's Jack McGarry.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. So you got some really cool news this week. Or last week, was it?
Yeah, we were... very, very fortunate to become number one in World's 50 Best Bars. So
congratulations, man.
That's the dead rabbit, right?
Yeah, it's been a week.
Wow. Jesus. I mean, you had a very busy summer, too. I mean, you opened Blacktail this summer. Mm-hmm. The spot in Chicago, that was, I guess, earlier in the year, too?
Yeah, that would have been this time last year. We opened in Chicago, Green River. So that's with the Union Square events guys, Danny Meyer's company. So they run it, but we have developed a beverage program there and the branding. We've been keeping ourselves busy.
Man. So, so last time you were on the show, almost 2.5 years ago, mm-hmm. It was you and Sean Muldoon, your business partner at Dead Rabbit. You guys had already, Dead Rabbit's been open 4 years?
Yeah, it's 4 years in February.
Cool. Congratulations.
Yeah,
you guys had already just come out of the gate, like, sweeping up awards left and right. And I can't even imagine, Dead Rabbit's more than just a bar. It's three bars. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. It's
it's like a complex.
Yeah.
And, it's hard enough for me to even attempt to run one bar.
We were just talking off air about how I have 3 employees, you have 90.
Yeah,
I pull my hair out. It's hard enough to run 3 plus myself.
So how do you do it, man? Yeah.
Well, we're very fortunate.
We're all taking notes. How do you become number one? That's what we want to know.
Very fortunate that we have I know a lot of people probably say this, and it's the kind of the prerequisite answer, but we have a lot of great people that work for us. When we opened Dead Rabbit, it's nearly 4 years old now. I'd say well over 70% of the team is still with us.
That's incredible.
That's huge.
Even just with any company, especially
hospitality service. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's insane.
So it's with having that little or no turnover, and it's the same with Blacktail, albeit Blacktail's only 2.5 months old. Our people really understand the philosophy and the culture and what we're trying to go for. So With having that culture, we've been able to promote from that pool, and it's everybody really understands what we're going for. So it makes our lives very, very, well, not very easy, but it's still a lot of hard work. But it makes it easier because everybody that works there is going, like, they're trying to be the best versions of themselves. They want everything they do to be the best, and they really are our eyes and ears. Like, if something's broke, we know about it right away, or if they see something that can be improved, they're coming to us with those ideas. And when you have that type of mentality in your team, you're off to a great start. You know,
that's great, man.
How do you instill that kind of culture in your team?
Well, we came
I can see from Blacktail, so they've already got, they can look back and see Dead Rabbit in the past and where it's going and where it's become. But how did you crack that egg at the Dead Rabbit and just say, okay, guys, we're shooting to be number one?
Yeah, well, it's not, a part of it is like the awards are obviously part of that. But the big part when we're hiring people and identifying the people that we want to work for us, we're asking the questions like, why do you want to come and work for us? What is it? What's your goal in a couple of years? And the big thing that we're trying to recruit is people that really want to push themselves, want to be the best versions of themselves. Because if it's very, and particularly in New York, from what we have found, is there's people that want to be here for a short period of time and then move on to the next place, and they're only doing things to like better themselves. But if you want to be part of something bigger and really like take everything that we're trying to promote, and we're in day in, day out really preaching that, like, we have to be improving every day. And the staff have just taken to it. But it's stuff like they see how hard we work, and they in turn step up to the plate for us, you know. So it really is a win-win relationship, you know.
Yeah, well, I like how you said twice in that little talk that you're looking for people who want to be the best version of themselves.
Yeah.
And then that in turn creates the best version of your bar.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think that that mentality has changed? Because I know that, like, I'd say 6 years ago, somewhere around that time, there was a really also there were a lot of new bars opening, new cocktail bars opening left, right, all over the place, and it was really hard to keep their staffs. Not just for me, but like for I talked and commiserated with a lot of different bar owners and managers and whatnot. They were saying they were just having a really hard time because there were so many people jumping ship to the next new thing that opened, you know, the next month.
Yeah.
It was that.
Yeah, it was that fast.
Saturated, that like quick. Yeah.
There was a huge wash for about 2 years, I think, where it was just churning. So many places were coming out that were so notable or operated by people who were notable, and people wanted to jump on that team. Yeah, it was hard. It was a lot of attrition back in that couple of years, and that's kind of right when you were starting. So it's great that you've held on to so many.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, don't get me wrong. The parlor, so obviously, as you said, there's three different rooms in the Dead Rabbit. So there's the tap room and the parlor. So the tap room would be the pub and the parlor would be the cocktail bar. And then the third floor is essentially an extension of the pub. So with the parlor, it's kind of the all-out cocktail bar in the venue. So we've kind of had two teams in the period of time we've been open. The first team, we would have went for more like established, experienced bartenders, named bartenders, if you like celebrity bartenders. And I have respect for every one of them, but the thing that we realize is that these people are coming on board with their own agendas, and they're not willing to kind of work with our philosophy. And my it was me kind of developing into a leadership role, and it very quickly became apparent to me that if they feel like they're too big for the team, they've got to go. And in a summer we had about five or six employees that had either left or we had parted company, and it afforded us a great opportunity to really build a culture and build a really work on our philosophy. So with that we hired younger people, people that wanted to be, as I said, the best versions of themselves, but weren't necessarily well known bartenders by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, they're well known now, but they weren't back then. And we've trained them really hard. We have a very, very intense training structure in Dead Rabbit, but to offset the intensity, we also take the guys out for bowling or take them away for a day or stuff like that to kind of offset it, because the culture is pretty intense. But what we've got out of that is loyalty, and a disciplined workforce and people that really, really care about the place. They treat it as their own, and I swear to God, they really do. So it's something that we've had to learn, because I would have been... Like, when I came over from Belfast in London, I would have heard of all these, like, famous bartenders, and them coming to work for us was, like, it would have, like, clouded my judgment. Where now it's, like, if the most important thing is a team, and as soon as anybody steps out of line with that, myself included, they're reprimanded, you know. So there's accountability for us as leaders, and there's accountability for the team to ensure that they're doing the job day in, day out, you know.
Yeah, amazing. Well, we talked again off air about how I hired... You know, one of my bartenders, Max, he was the doorman at Death & Co., just a few doors down. He had bartended only really one time before that, but he was a really nice guy.
Yeah.
And I was like, I need a nice guy. Yeah, I can make you into a good bartender.
Yeah.
It's the most important thing. Like, with the training that we have at Dead Rabbit, I firmly believe that, and it's the same with you guys, like, if you have the right character, and you want to learn, I believe you can turn that in person into an incredible employee. But if they're coming in and their character's suspect, that's something that we're on top of right away.
Yeah.
And I when we hire people and we go through like the resume, I'm phoning up, I'm asking the questions of where they've been before, and I want to get them to know their character, get a feel for what we're doing, because hiring an employee, you're getting into a relationship, you know, it really is.
Absolutely.
And you have to make sure you're making a calculated decision, and sometimes you can do all the research and stuff that you can, and you'll still find that it'll be a problematic thing, but it's something that we take very, very seriously.
Well, that's
paying off.
Yeah, absolutely, man, that's for sure. I mean, like, just the idea of like the building the team rather than building the individual, like as you said before, like a celebrity bartender or star tender, sometimes you call it. That's important, man. You know, like it's not like, you know, World War II and you've got like Bogart. Did Bogart go to the service? I don't even know what I'm saying now. But okay, I did think about something that I wanted to touch on that's really cool. Just thinking about the last time that you were on the show, there's quite a bit that's changed, especially with you have this like foresight, mm-hmm. you and Sean do with the bars that you're opening. Like, for instance, the Dead Rabbit, it's mostly focused on like the tap room is focused on Irish whiskeys, right? You guys have like this incredible selection of Irish whiskey. Mm-hmm. And since you opened, and since the last time you were on the show, I mean, we've gotten a lot more. We've got like Teeling and Yellow Spot and all these different whiskeys that have come out. Is that part of kind of what your idea was with Blacktail? Because it's a Cuban themed cocktail bar and restaurant, and the food is fantastic.
Yeah. Delicious.
I got to go there like right when you guys opened it. It was great. I just want to give a shout out to the chef.
Yeah.
that tomato salad with bacon that I had when I came the first night.
Our food sales at Dead Rabbit account to 24% of the sales, but and Blacktail it's 38-39%. You know, it's very, very high.
Right on. That's great.
So, yeah.
You want food when you're drinking, right?
Yeah.
But on the spirit side, just in the same way that you guys opened 4 years ago at Dead Rabbit, and now we're getting all this access to, having all this extra access to new Irish whiskeys and scotches, I think you guys are probably a big part of that, like having that like elevated market for those styles of whiskey, whereas before it was shots of Jameson.
Yeah.
Or Powers, or Bushmills, if you're feeling frisky.
Yeah.
And now there's so much more interest in it. And I say that
has to account to demand. Demand creates supply.
Yeah.
You know, if those makers and distributors see that there's a demand and a bar with such a great reputation and such a team,
totally.
Then of course that.
Our big thing was definitely because a lot of bartenders back home weren't proud of it. When I say back home, I mean Ireland.
Yeah.
They weren't proud of it. I mean, I can't, like, I feel like we've influenced American, the culture in terms of what we do, like, Irish whiskey doing well in New York. I definitely think we're part of the conversation there, but obviously there's Pernod Ricard are putting in a lot of resources into having boots on the ground to really spread the message, and the same with the guys at Tullamore and Teeling, like, they're putting their money where their mouth is, but particularly with back home, it's something that we're very proud of, because we... Well, before when we left Ireland, there would have been one bottle of Irish whiskey in each bar. And when we came to Dead Rabbit, it was like, we know we've got a position of influence, particularly when it comes to Irish bartenders. And since we've made a fuss out of it and really tried to push it and showcase the diversity and versatility of the spirit, every time we go back to Ireland now, it's in every bar, there's numerous labels of Irish whiskey, and it's something that we're incredibly proud of.
Yeah, you know? It's really cool, too. Even... I guess to me, like sitting in that tap room and seeing all these bottles of whiskey that were not for sale, and they have stickers, they say like display only, not for sale. Yeah. And I remember asking you and Daniel is one of the
Daniel's
like, and I was like, man, come on, just can you just pour me some of that? You're like, man, no, I can't. But it's cool every time going there.
It's a show of strength, though. It's good to see them all.
Mm-hmm. It is. But what's cool about it, Southern and Jag, is that I feel like every time I go there, and this is a testament to the Irish whiskeys that we get in this market, I'm seeing less and less of those display-only stickers on the bottles.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that's a really cool thing to see.
Right.
I mean, we have 100, and we're probably close now to about 190 labels.
Wow.
I'd say about 100 of those would be stuff that would be available here. If it's not 100, it's towards that number. Where when we started out, there was about 30, maybe 30 or 40.
Yeah.
And a lot of that would have been stuff that you couldn't, like it wasn't in a price bracket that you could put it in cocktails.
Sure.
Where now all these Irish whiskies that are being released, they're all about being put into mixed drinks. So it's incredible to see.
Yeah. And just like from that kind of spirit of like foresight, is that kind of like an influencer for opening a Cuban place? That with the potential of very, very...
Yeah, the embargo soon, finally being lifted.
Yeah, having like all this access to great Cuban rums.
Well, to be honest now, the Cuban concept was something that we were actually sitting on before we opened up Dead Rabbit.
Oh, wow.
It was something that we were thinking about doing in Belfast with our boss in Belfast. We were kind of promised the opportunity to open our own bar in Belfast if we won the award that we won, and we won it, and it just didn't happen. It wasn't materializing, so we were offered the opportunity to come and open our own bar in New York, and the brief from our angel investor was, build a bar that you feel like will be here today and not gone tomorrow. like a bar that has longevity. So when we researched, when we started researching like Irish America, that's when we came across a Dead Rabbit story, and we kind of put the Cuban bar on a back burner. But when we were showing this space, our partner's own PRA, and it's a huge, like he's been in, and it's an absolutely massive venue.
Yeah.
So we were offered
football field.
Yeah, it's massive. We were offered 2,500 square feet of it to begin with, and they wanted to take over the entire second floor. But they said, like, think of a concept that you would think would work here. And when we started doing the research, we found out that the Blacktail Fleet operated on the Hudson, which where PRA is, and that connection for the Cuban bar worked there. So we handed that back over to our partners, and then our partners really done a lot of aggressive research and came back and presented us with the brand that is Blacktail.
Blacktail Fleet, by the way, there was a fleet of planes that had a Blacktail fan
on them, that would have taken the passengers down during Prohibition. So it's the thing that we really wanted to do was talk about the movement, the cocktail movement, and also the American movement and how it kind of influenced Havana during that time. And the big thing that we were seeking to create was when you go into Blacktail, that it's a transporting type of experience. It's very airy. It's very, like, for me anyway, I feel anytime I walk in, I feel like I'm out of New York. Be it the uniforms, be it the drinks, be it the, like, every element, the decor has been thoroughly researched. Where the Dead Rabbit, it feels like a New York bar, you know. It's got that, like, it's claustrophobic, it's comfortable, but it's snug, where Blacktail has that nice spacious airy feel about it, you know. So it was something that we worked really, really hard on. But Blacktail came way before Dead Rabbit, to be honest with you.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's why we do the show.
A lot of people ask us, like, oh, like, are you open it because of the embargo being lifted? And all, it had absolutely nothing to do with it.
Yeah, because this idea came from living in a place where it didn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so, and we have, don't get me wrong, we have a few bottles of Havana on the back bar for decoration, but
Decoration.
Yeah, we all know what that means. I have some decorations in my bar too.
Yeah, me too.
So, but the more stuff that comes in, obviously we'll utilize it. But obviously, at this moment in time, we're still a year or so away from that materializing.
Right.
You know.
Right. So. Cool. So you've got. I don't really know much about Green River.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's in a hospital or something like
that? It is, yes. It's very... yeah,
on the 17th floor?
It's an interesting...
You guys don't like to build anything easy to get to.
No, well, we like projects that people write off. Like, the thing that we... Well, as it came about, Danny Meyer's company approached us to do this project, and our mission statement really is to challenge the misconceptions of an Irish pub. An Irish pub, quite similar to Irish whiskey, has essentially been pigeonholed as a commodity or as a, like, and when you say Irish pub, to most people, they think of Times Square, they think of a crappy, like, and I feel like a lot of operators open America or Irish bars, and they feel like they can get away with an inferior product because it's an Irish bar. So our thing is really to bring it into the 21st century, because the Irish pub back home is known for hospitality, genuine hospitality. But it's not known for that, like, world-class product at the end of it. So that's something that we've tried to bring together. So when we were offered this opportunity, we knew that there was a rich Irish narrative in Chicago.
Yeah.
And when we came to know about the location, like, it's in an area of Chicago that's, like, the financial district. It's on the 18th floor or 17th floor of a hospital building. So, I mean, it is a difficult project, but... It's completely different to Blacktail and Dead Rabbit. I mean, it's not as thematic. Like, the Dead Rabbit and Blacktail are very thematic, and everything's very deliberate. It's a partnership with Union Square Events, and we have delivered the beverage program and the branding. But it's a lot more. I'd say it's a lot cleaner than our two venues that we own. But it's a great program. The food's fantastic. The drinks are fantastic, and we've a very, very talented bar manager down there called Julia Mamuzi, and she's extremely gifted. And the team that she has working for are very, they're brilliant, but we wouldn't be there day in, day out the way we would be with Dead Rabbit. So it's something, like, we're involved in it, but it's something I still feel weird talking about because I'm not there 24/7, you know. So.
Right. How often do you get over there?
I would probably be in Chicago once every 2.5-3 months, and we would be in, like, daily communication with what's, like, we're aware of what's going on, but it's the only consultancy project that we've done, and I'd say, to be honest with you, it's the only one we will ever do. Because doing that, it's something that we're proud of, but for us to do what we do in our level of work and the culture and that environment, we have to like
have make to be sure on the ground, yeah.
Area. Mm-hmm. Like our finger has to be on the pulse, and unfortunately, our finger wouldn't be on the pulse with Green River, albeit it's still a very, very good bar. But it's something that we've learned about, you know.
You live, you learn.
Yeah.
Are you going to take a break today, Damon?
No, man, let's just keep going.
Cool. I'm just checking the clock. So 50 best bars in the world, number one. Uh-huh. And then the number 50 comes to mind again.
Yeah.
Just this past week, you decided to run 50 miles.
Yeah.
What was chasing you? I don't think I'd run that far unless something big was chasing me.
I stopped drinking about close to 7 months ago. So since I've stopped drinking, it was like I've always loved running.
Let's make sure the listener heard that.
Yeah.
So you operate the world's number one bar, and you operate Blacktail, and you're not drinking for 7 months.
Right,
I just want to make sure the audience heard that. Moving on, yes.
So since I stopped, you look at things very, very differently. But with the running in particular, it's always something that's like, because when I'm in work, I'm totally engaged. I'm like on a laptop, on the phone, dealing with staff, dealing with distributor. Like as you guys know, you're just engaged the whole time. So the only time I get to really disengage is when I work out. So running, I just got more and more into running and running really long distances because you're it's just you and your thoughts and you can work stuff out. And I've also got into yoga and stuff like that as well. So I'm putting an awful lot of energy into like making sure I'm,
self-care.
Yeah, self-care. And
which is something that we don't talk about very often.
Mm-hmm. And not enough, in fact. I do dumb things. I don't even wear the right shoes. You know, I wear flat-footed Vans and I'm on my feet for 12 hours a day. You know, it's stupid.
Well, that's the thing. It was Peter Dorelli, who's a famous bartender in the UK. He's one of the head bartenders of the Savoy. He said the two things that he spends the most money on are his bed and the shoes that he wears. And I thought that was an incredibly smart statement because, I mean, you're on your feet most of the day. And the other period of time where you're not on your feet, you're probably in bed. Well, us being bartenders, we're probably not in bed that as often.
Right.
But it's something like I bought a bed recently and I spent a fortune on it. And it's something that it's like you should be spending like six, 7 hours a night in it and getting a comfortable sleep. So since I stopped drinking, my way of thinking is totally changed. Like when I'm in work, I want to be fully focused on work and being fully present. Whereas before, when I would have worked about 100-hour weeks, but when you're working that amount of time, you're not fully present.
Nope,
you're not. And you might feel like you're there, and like the fact that you're there feels like you're like in your mind you're working, but you're not really.
What do they call it? The 100%, 70%, right? If you're there 100% of the time, you're only operating at 70%.
Exactly.
But
yeah.
If you're there 70% of the time, you're operating at 100%.
Exactly. So I would be in the bar now like 55, 60 hours a week. And then I take like Saturday I'm mostly off and Sunday I'm fully off. And that gives me time to like set up my week, what are my targets for the week, plan when I'm going to work out, what I'm going to achieve. And like it's just changed. It's just changed the way I go about things on a day-to-day basis, you know?
Yeah. How does that affect your like R&D, like your cocktail development? I mean, you're still tasting.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's something again. Like we've got great people working for us. So in Dead Rabbit, we have Gillian, who's very, very talented drinks creator, and she's also overseeing what goes on in Blacktail. But in Blacktail, we have Jesse Vita, who's somebody that it's very, very talented. He's a great guy. So before I would have been involved in R&D every single step of the way. But the way we work now is like I'll kind of help the guys develop the wireframe of what the program's going to look like and what type of things we need to be doing. But then I'll step back at that point and they'll do the most of the work, and then I'll come in at the end of it to make sure that we're at this, like we're hitting the standards that we need to be
hitting.
Yeah. So it's an entirely different structure. So because before I would have been involved the whole way, and you're tasting, you know yourselves, like these are tasting drinks countless times, and those sips turn into cocktails, and the cocktails turn into, oh sure, we may as well just have a beer afterwards, and then a beer turns into you're out to 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
Like I don't want to be in a bar after 9 p.m. and stuff. And in Blacktail, just being open, I've had to be very disciplined with myself, because it's like it's easy when you just open a bar to be like, I need to be here 24/7 in case something goes wrong. Where now it's like I want something to go wrong, because it gets the guys to learn how to solve the issue. And if it's something that can't be solved, then we can solve it the next morning with a fresh set of eyes, and we're fully ready to solve it. So it's just a different, it's just something that we've
It's like a paradigm shift. Yeah, you've really changed your philosophy. Yeah. And is this a decision that's going to go on forever?
I'm very, very open about the fact that I would be an alcoholic. And it was getting, I started in this industry at 15 years of age, and I've been extremely fortunate in this industry in the terms of, the recognition and opportunities to do a lot of things. And I would never say it in a bad way, but the one thing that I neglected with the, laser focus would have been, building coping healthy coping mechanisms to, deal with the workload, deal with the stress, deal with, a problematic employee, where that when I was drinking, I would have been explosive.
Right.
So now that I've stopped drinking, I'm able to kind of deal with those underlying issues of immaturity, the anxiety, the depression, and all that. I'm able to fully work on that now, and make sure that, because my philosophy has always been to be make sure everybody's being the best versions of themselves. But what I neglected in that whole process was me.
Being the best version of yourself.
So now it's I have to be the best me that I can be, so I can be the best me for the staff as well, you know. So yeah, it's been a hard enough process, but it's been rewarding, you know.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the accolades and the awards keep rolling in, and probably even more so fueled by your renewed enthusiasm.
Yeah, I mean, it was getting to a point where, the traveling and working all the time, it sounds like a pretty glamorous lifestyle, but I just didn't have an opportunity to switch off, and it was starting to suck out of my love for the industry.
Yeah.
Where now, stopping it 7 months ago, that has returned, and more I'm hungrier now than I've ever been. I've more enthusiasm now than I've ever had, and more determination to continue to where we're going, because a lot of people are asking us oh, you've won World's Best Bar, and how does that feel? And when for the listeners, these awards are it's an award. It's not everybody's idea of what the World's Best Bar looks like, and it's entirely different. We think that Dead Rabbit is the World's Best Bar in our opinion. That's our version of the World's Best Bar, and Blacktail is the same for a different narrative, but everybody's opinion on how that looks is different. But the thing that people ask, what are you going to do now? And I think a lot of people are we've made it, and we can kind of switch off now and just make sure the profit margin's really strong and that type of stuff. And it's completely different for us. Our thing is if it's not broke, you need to keep fixing it anyway. You need to keep improving, you need to keep everybody disciplined. And I was very, very happy the day that we won, but the next morning I sent an email out to the staff saying it was great, but I need to throw some caution to the wind here. The world's eyes are going to be on us. We need to be better now than we've ever been, and
we need to
continually improve, because we have not made it, you know.
Yeah, right. Now you've got this label, that means people are going to come in and test it.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
People are going to come test that metal.
Exactly. And I think the Dead Rabbit's always, in a lot of ways, had that label. Not necessarily world's best, but it's won a lot of awards. So that's opened us up for, we're scrutinized all the time, and we've been criticized for things that we've done, and many other bars wouldn't be criticized because they're not looked through the same microscope.
Sure.
But that's part and parcel of if you win these awards, you have to be ready for that type of attention, you know?
Yeah, it's sort of the dark side of success. Yeah,
absolutely. And everybody's when you win it, everybody's oh, I didn't deserve it. And the awards,
you got a trophy on your shelf, but you got a target on your back.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You know, and the industry getting bigger and bigger that it now is, it's fantastic. There's radio shows, there's bartenders are becoming celebrities, but the flip side of that is there's an awful lot of I call teething problems with the industry. It's a lot of people sniping at each other and trying to resolve issues on Facebook, and it's just the industry's, it's in a weird position, I feel at the minute.
Yeah, growth, growing pains,
because as soon as the award was announced, we seen it straight away. People complaining about it, you know. It's can you not just leave it alone for a couple of hours, you know? But that's just the way the industry is.
Let us celebrate for 5 minutes, right?
Man, well, you know, outside of all that, it's still really cool that you got the award.
Yeah.
You know,
no, absolutely,
and congratulations again on that.
Thank you.
And congrats on the all the success with Blacktail and Green River. Mm-hmm. You're just doing really cool stuff. It's always great to have you in the studio. Mm-hmm. I love chatting with you. For the listeners out there, the Dead Rabbit Grocery and Grog Drinks Manual is also out. It came out last year. Mm-hmm. you and Sean wrote this book with Ben Schaefer.
Yeah.
Really great dude. Really cool book, man. I love going through here because I'm like, it inspires me not to make the drinks in the book. It just inspires me to go back to the Dead Rabbit because, like,
yeah.
There's some very involved cocktail recipes in this book. But
also some great stories and allegories. Like, it's a great book to read.
Yeah. So you should definitely, like, the listeners out there, you should definitely check it out. You can get on Amazon, different websites, or you can just
pick one up at the Dead Rabbit.
Yeah. Just pick one at the Dead Rabbit, right? And while you're there, I mean, like, do you guys still offer your menus?
We do, your graphic novel menus.
Yeah, yeah. They're so cool.
Which are amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can pick those up too. I mean, those are, to me, those are like, they're like graphic novels. They're like collectible.
Yeah. Collectible. Yeah.
And they're so really well thought out and beautifully designed. Just like your bars. I just want to say thanks again, Jack.
Yeah, man.
I'm really
on the air.
Really glad
and,
to have
and for
you
being
back.
As open and honest as you are about all the things that are going on.
Yeah,
yeah. And it's I think that there's a lot of opportunity for us to better ourselves health wise. I mean, I know that, like, there's starting to be different retreats and different classes, like yoga classes that different spirits companies are putting on.
Well, I mean, Jim Meehan recently did a talk where he talked about how, no longer is our profession short term. Mm-hmm. No longer is it a thing you do to cross a bridge between college and your career or acting or the office job you were looking for. Now it's something you do not for 3 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. You do it for 40 years.
Yeah, and it's physically demanding. You got to be able to keep doing it.
I think literally today on the train back to work, I'm going to look up beds and shoes. There's two things that I definitely don't spend money on. Like, this is what I wear to work. Vans. I mean, I love Vans. Vans are great. But maybe they're not for work.
Yeah.
Well, cool. I mean, I wear cowboy boots. I can't. But things are made for work. Different kind of work. But, it's still work. Yeah. Jack, thanks again, man.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for being on.
To have you on.
And congratulations on 50 miles. And you mentioned before the show also you're going to try and run 100 next year.
Yeah, next year. I'm gonna
24 hours of straight running.
Yeah.
That's,
I'm going to enjoy the fact that I was able to run 50 for a couple of weeks yet, and then I'll start getting training for the next year.
Wow.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
Well, good luck with that, man. All right. Well, that's it for the Speakeasy this week. Check out Heritage Radio Network for many other programs like this one. Until next week, I'm Damon Bolte.
My name is Souther Teague.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some in the air.
Are you an East Sider? We live on the east side of town. Our shipping container studios are at Roberta's in Bushwick, across the East River, separating New York City and Brooklyn. In all my recent travels, it seems like the east side of town is the cool side of town in cities across the country. East Nashville is full of musicians and weird bars. The up-and-coming neighborhood around 8th Street in D.C., on the east side, is overflowing with exciting food and nightlife. The best hidden spots and funky artists in New Orleans are in the Marinian Bywater, which, is the east side of town. So, as East Siders, we love drinks that represent our values. And nothing is more fitting than a cool, refreshing can of Austin East Siders. That's East Cider with a C. As the name implies, it is cider, and it's handmade on, you guessed it, the east side of Austin, Texas, using bittersweet and bittersharp cider apples. Cider apples are full of tannins, adding astringency and complexity of flavor to every sip. Austin East Siders uses a mixture of European and Pacific Northwest apples to achieve ultimate flavor. Austin East Siders is available in a few different variations, including original flavor, Texas honey, and two new additions, hopped and pineapple. Here at Heritage Radio, we love Austin East Siders with some ribs, pulled pork, and even pizza, especially Roberta's pizza. You can find out more at AustinEastSiders.com and remember to hashtag EastSiders to show your East Side pride. You can also find Austin East Siders on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website, or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.